This WJBC This Week.
So I asked the parents, be patient. We're trying to get back to those calls.
Some of the racers actually slid out into traffic.
We could look at options of proceeding towards a not guilty by reason of insanity. There's different options that we can look at legally.
I used the best knowledge I had based on those documents and the Siam management contract to see if the city got paid what they were owed. My calculations show they didn't.
The vested power of incumbency is always substantially greater than what any challenger might present.
Because of the amount of water we had, we made the sad decision to cancel the show for this weekend.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stott. On this week's program, Unit 5's superintendent is asking for more patience as the district works out its busing problems. A community event in Bloomington was marred by an act of violence. Bloomington Normal's new teen club expands to help more youth in our community. Curbside literacy comes to Bloomington in the form of little free libraries. Plus, meet a Bloomington woman who is one of the strongest in the world. That and more coming up this WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Unit 5 is still working through its various transportation problems, but the district's superintendent says things are improving. The district has been experiencing overcrowded and late buses since the first day of school, to the dismay of many parents and students. Superintendent Mark Daniel talked with WJBC's Terry James this week.
Last year, we weren't hearing about these problems. School start times were changed, and now we're having these problems. So isn't that to blame?
Well, you know, you'd think so, but I think there are many districts that have two tiers the size of ours. I think that with all the planning that had taken place up to the 11th hour, that we should have had a clean implementation. Instead, I think it was an execution issue, and I've talked to First Student directly. Routing was an issue, and we were assured that it was going to be clean. You're always going to have some startups issues with any start of the year. For instance, new routes for drivers, they're going to be late. You have a bus that breaks down. You have a flat tire. That's real world. That happens. Mm-hmm. But to have the level of overcrowdedness, to have the level, we knew we were going to have some overcrowdedness, so we built in some factors. But to have the level that we had, we underestimated, I believe, the number of students that we're going to channel into ridership. That won't happen again.
Within First Student, people have lost their jobs over this, haven't they?
There have been some management changes in our local office, yes.
What about Unit 5?
Not in Unit 5, no.
All right. What can we expect in the coming week? Labor Day, of course, is a day off of school. Do you feel confident? Or let me ask it this way. When do you feel confident that buses will be running on time and there won't be these continual complaints that there were overcrowding?
One of the things we've discovered with this process is you need to treat one significant problem at a time. Overcrowding was the focus, and it will continue to be the focus, and I don't think it's ever going to leave in regards to our being monitoring and focusing. So that needs to be resolved, and we'll continue to address it, as I said. So the next area would be our early childhood. You heard about that happening today. We'll look at the results this afternoon and see if those adjustments made a difference. If not, we'll ask for more adjustments. The third level then would be our timeliness. Mm-hmm. And I want buses where they need to be, so students are in classes when bell rings. So that will be another major area that we'll focus on. Ideally, we'd love to see this, and I'm talking above and beyond normal situations that happen, like the flat tire, like the bus breaks down, or a sub just didn't know where they went, and so on and so forth. But I really would like to see this September 10th be a day where we can say we're back to normalcy.
We're about out of time here. We could talk for hours about this, I know. But you are actually looking at riding some of these buses,
yes,
so that you can get a one-on-one view.
Absolutely.
Why?
Why? Because right now we don't have video on some of our buses, and so there's not a true picture of what's happening. And I want to make sure that my information is accurate. And again, bottom line is we're helping students get on buses, and buses are safe, and buses are on time to school.
Two more things. Next school board meeting, will you move it to a bigger venue again?
I believe we will. There are some other things happening as well, so we think there probably will be a need to move it to a larger venue. But again, I do want to thank our secretaries, our EOPs, our bus drivers, our principals, because this has been a very difficult situation. Anytime you deal with issues of this nature, but I want to thank them for remaining professional. I also want to thank them for remaining calm. And again, we are an unbelievable school district. And this points to what happens when, although we've reduced some of our service, i.e. there are some people that are having to walk where they probably didn't walk before, and we've had to reduce buses, which has made us be very particular in our efficiency of our routing. In other words, we've had to, yes, add more students to buses. Should not be overcrowded or unsafe, so I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just saying this is what happens when you have to push and stretch and pull and win dollars, because when you look at that $1.2 million, that's a lot of busing that we've had to pull. And I'm not saying that we haven't made errors in our implementation, because it's obvious. But at the same time, it's made it very difficult. So you want a sound education, though. Unbelievable education. That's Unit 5. Actually, it's our districts in Central Illinois do an unbelievable job. And I'm hoping people realize when you start cutting, things like this will come forward. So,
I know I'm ridiculously over time here now, but the people have lost trust. Mm-hmm. And how do you get that back?
You get that back by performing. So you get that back by having kids in the classes when they need to be in classes. So, and you get that back by responding to parents. And we're trying to do so. So I ask the parents, be patient. We're trying to get back to those calls. We'll get back to you as soon as possible.
That was Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel with Terry James. It was meant to be an event to show the best of Bloomington Normal. Downtown Bloomington was the site for the 4th annual Bloomington Criterium, a series of races involving highly skilled bicyclists from across the Midwest. But the day took a dark turn when someone apparently tried to sabotage the event by placing handfuls of thumbtacks along the route. A group of cyclists blew tires and crashed, causing a major pileup and sending several cyclists to the hospital. One of the competitors suffered a broken arm. Race director Brandon Beaton talk with WJBC's Dan Swaney this week.
Fill in for the folks what happened.
Yeah. So this was the Category 4 men's state championship race going on. And we start getting reports that, you know, there's a lot of flat tires, and we're getting reports from our SRAM mutual support guy that we're finding tacks in people's tires. And then about a minute later, we hear that there is a huge crash on corner 6. And from that crash, the results are one racer has a broken arm, a couple guys have the skin on their hands, elbows and shoulders are ripped off. So, you know, bikes are broken. So it was an act of sabotage that kind of turned into an act of violence.
Where exactly on the streets? Can you tell us where this began to happen and then where people began to have their accidents and fall?
Yeah. So it appears that the tacks are placed on Center Street, or East Street, I'm sorry, just south of Six Strings. And then it was when they were turning back onto Center, I always get the four streets mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's once they're turning onto turn six for the race course, that's when all the, you know, the big crash happened, because that's when the effects of the pins took effect. The tires went flat. And as they're trying to take this turn at 25 to 30 miles an hour, you know, the front wheels washed out, and they went down.
I saw some of the pictures that were put on Facebook, and we're not talking about, you know, skin knees or anything. Like you said, somebody has a broken arm. We're talking about some injuries here that basically just scuffed off the top layers of skin. It looked awful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One local racer, Matt, he's on the local Bloomington cycle team. Yeah, his hands are messed up, and that picture is floating around social media right now. What you're not seeing is his elbow, his shoulder, even his chin are messed up as well. And then another guy, Alejandro, his arm is broken. He's a grad student from up north. These are all just members of the community that somebody decided to mess with, and it ended up hurting them pretty bad.
This is nothing like this has ever happened in this race, has it?
No, not that I know of. From previous iterations, and then the last 4 years that I've been doing it, we haven't had anything like that. The community's been great. Our sponsors have been great. Our volunteers have been great. The city, they've been a big help. And this has really been the only negative that we've ever encountered.
Unbelievable. What happened then after this big accident took place and the people were injured? What started to happen after that?
So, yeah, after that big crash, we had some great volunteers that took the initiative to stop traffic, because one of these guys actually shot out into the lanes of traffic. And I volunteered, they did a great job getting everything under control. And the EMTs went and made sure everybody was safe. And then at that point, we actually had to stop the race and walk the course with volunteers and make sure there weren't any other attacks on the course. So we did that. We got chief of police was down there, so he started getting his team together. And then after a while, it was about 10 to 15 minutes, at that point, we started racing again. We were finishing up the Cat 4 race. But, these guys have been, they sound like weekend warriors, because it's a Category 4 race, but these guys have been working, since February to have a good year riding their bike, and they work out, And for it to come to an end like that is really just devastating.
Yeah, and you said most, it wasn't just a couple of tacks. It was a lot of tacks that were thrown into the race course.
Oh, yeah. I had plenty of guys come up to me with just handfuls. So, even if you only have five guys come up to you with a handful, that's still a lot of tacks. That's more than just one box you would buy. This definitely had all the writings of a kind of just sabotage.
Yeah, somebody planned it. It's you just wonder, what do you have to be thinking to do something like this? I'm not even a bicyclist. It's somebody that like you and the people who do this. They do this seriously, and they invest a lot of time, lots of money in what they do, only to have some idiot do this is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's a very selfish thing to do. It doesn't really, it doesn't speak well of the community, which stinks, because this community is a great community, and someone like that just doesn't really belong here.
Yeah. And of course, we're presuming somebody's, it could have been somebody from out of town or someplace else,
yeah.
But probably when the police find out who did this, it'll be somebody who lived not too far from downtown or at least in our community, which just makes me sick.
Yep.
Bloomington police are involved in this now, correct?
Correct. Yep. They have an investigation going. So if anybody does know anything, please give the police department a call. There is an active investigation going on, and we hope to get some results in. Yeah, we do have some video footage. We haven't acquired it from the racer yet, but I know at least one racer had a camera on his bike, so hopefully that'll provide some insight, and some of the local businesses had cameras down there, so hopefully we'll get something.
That was Bloomington Criterium Director Brandon Beaton with Dan Sweeney. Several youth groups in Bloomington Normal have pooled their resources to expand the help that's available to young people in the Twin Cities. The Bloomington Police Department, Town of Normal, Lawrence Irvin Neighborhood Center, Western Avenue Community Center, and the Boys and Girls Club have formed Teen Club. Its director is Mike Donnelly. He talked with WJBC's Todd Weinbrenner this week.
When we talk about the teen club, what are we actually talking about?
So what we have right now is that Monday through Friday from 3 to 9 p.m., we are offering services for our young folks. Usually age range runs from about 12 to 18 years old. We start 3 to 5 with tutoring for our young folks. And then after that, on Tuesdays and Thursdays specifically, we have guest speakers and like a curriculum-based type programming that we offer. And then on Mondays and Wednesdays, we really just kind of open up the facility, both sides of both the Lawrence Irving Neighborhood Center and the Boys and Girls Club side, to really just be a safe haven for our young folks, a safe place for them to come, hang out, be with their friends, and, you know, at the same time, be around some caring adults.
And that really is the key, to be around people that are not really intervening, I guess is too strong a word, but just exercising some influence, keeping
an
eye on things.
That's right.
How did you get there, Mike? Let's talk about how you came to this position.
So the last 3 years, I was before being in this position, I was employed with United Way. And so really had and been in this working with young folks for about the last 15 years. So I had a lot of knowledge about a lot of the different programs in our community, a lot of different services that were geared towards our young folks. About a year ago, got approached by Bloomington Police Department about a youth interventionist position that they had available, and really stepped into that role. We identified maybe about 15 guys that they really wanted me to kind of work with, try to get a handle on kind of what was going on with them and their families and provide some services. In that role, really started to identify with the Lawrence Irving Neighborhood Center and the teen club programming that they were offering at that particular time, in conjunction with the Boys and Girls Club, and just kind of sat down with everyone and said, hey, it looks like we're all kind of on the same page. Looks like we're all wanting to do the same thing with our young folks. And can we come to the table and really talk about what that would look like if we were to provide more of a collaborative approach to the work? And so that's where I started back in May. So over the last year, we were really working kind of through the details to put it all together. And I started in the position in May. This past summer, we offered programming to just kind of really wanted to keep the young folks busy during the summertime. So we Tuesdays and Thursdays, we were offering programming to the young folks and work with O'Neill Park, the city of Bloomington, and they gave us the pool and, like, the park and things like that. So really just really looking at our community and saying we've got a wealth of resources and kind of having a one-stop shop to a certain degree for our teens, in my opinion, is really kind of the ultimate goal of what we're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. Just having a place to go counts for a lot.
Absolutely.
Is the demand high? I mean, that may sound like a naive question, but, I mean, how many kids are you actually talking about?
So last year when they were doing the teen club programming, we had an average of about 125 teens that were coming through the program. I would say there was roughly about 287 young folks that that actually signed up for the program or, like, stopped through the doors. But in terms of young folks who were coming on a consistent basis, we had about 125 young folks that we've been working with. And so that, as we move forward, that's kind of our target. But we're always willing to, you know, work with any young folks that come our direction.
Well, how do young people get involved with the program? How do they find out about it? How do they sign up for it?
So September 12th, and this would be a big day for the parents, September 12th at the Lawrence Irving Neighborhood Center, which is located 1615 West Illinois Street in Bloomington. We are having a parent orientation on that day. Parents can come in, they can learn about our programming. We're going to have some of our facilitators and speakers that will be in the house on that day. So they really just get a chance to learn about the program, and that'll be a time where we'll be signing everyone up for our program this fall.
It just sounds amazing, Mike, that you're providing that level of service. Let's talk about the fact that kids are pulled in a lot of directions these days.
That's
so
right.
Once a kid signs up for one of your programs, I shouldn't call them kids. That sounds a little glib. But, you know, when these young people sign up for your programs, do they have to come to every session, or what are they committed to?
Well, what we really are, Tuesdays and Thursdays are really our big programming days. And so that's where we're really trying to talk to our young folks about decision making. You know, everything that we can think of that teens may be facing, we like to try to address those sort of issues. One of the big things that I'm going to be doing is during the day, for those young folks who are being who are a part of our programming in the evening is really getting out to the schools. And so a big focus for us is that academic piece for our young folks. It's great that we have a safe haven, great that we can provide mentoring, but we all know for the future of our young folks that anything that we can be doing to help them along the way with their academics is extremely important, and it's going to be a high priority for our program.
That was Mike Donnelly from Teen Club with Todd Weinbrenner. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. As Bloomington and Normal Public Libraries continue to look at their long-term futures, Normal is starting the early design stage for a new library, while Bloomington has also been studying an expansion or relocation. This while so-called curbside literacy is starting to spread. Joanne Martin created the Little Free Library on High Point Road in Normal, and she explained what that is as she talked with WJBC's Dan Swaney this week.
Now, I wanted to make sure people knew about this because you guys have worked so hard to get this going. Tell me about it.
Well, thank you. It's been a really, really super fun journey from the beginning, and we're still moving forward with many fun projects and things. And basically, the Little Free Library on High Point Road is one of 21 Little Free Libraries in the Bloomington Normal area. Ours happens to be located in a unique area in that we're the only library in Little Free Library in West Normal, west of Main Street, and we happen to be uniquely situated between two middle schools and two elementary schools right off of College Avenue. And so we have many students and children coming and going from all different directions and adults as well. And we also in our library have a selection from age zero all the way up to however old you want to be to choose from books.
Go ahead.
But anyway, it's been a fun journey this far, and like I said, we have a lot of unique things planned for it in the future, going beyond and reaching out as an outreach program, beyond just the library, just sitting there by itself holding books. We have a what I like to call our own little free bookmobile, Little Free Library bookmobile, where I put like a little license plate on the back of it, and I pull it, put books in the wagon and pull it into the neighborhood. And I had a unique experience doing that. It was a lot of fun passing out bookmarks and stickers, and one cute little girl came running up, and she just grabbed a bunch of books, and I had accidentally had an adult copy in there of the United States Constitution. I said, honey, I said, that's a grown-up book, and she said, I don't care. I'll give that to my mommy.
There you go. How do you get started wanting to put a Little Free Library in? And I've seen these all over town, and they're so cool just to see when you go by. And I've often wondered who gets the idea of how to put it together, where to put it, things like that. What's the process?
Well, the process, every library is unique, and basically I got started. I saw one in another town when I was out walking, and I thought, wow, that is really cool. And then I saw one on Facebook, and so then I went to the website and read about littlefreelibrary.org, by the way, is the website, and studied up on it, and they sell little free libraries that are already made. They provide building instructions on how to make your own, which I kind of bypass because that's just not up my alley.
No, nobody ever goes by the directions. You know that, right?
Yeah. So what I did was I researched designs and so forth, and I found a unique carpenter on a website called Etsy. And he's built 500 of these, and the design I saw of his was a two-story design, and it fits a lot of books. And so I connected with him, and he built a really swell library, and it's very well made. And so the first thing you do is you find the library or figure out how you want to do the library. Some people are inclined to be very, very talented carpenters. I don't happen to be one of those individuals, and so it was buying the library. So this carpenter really did a nice job, got it to us in a very, very quick manner. And but before we get to the library itself, there's a process, and it's a great question that you asked, how do you do this and how do you go about it? Because when we had our grand opening for our library, the question that we got from many of the people that came was, how can we get more of these on our street corners? This is awesome.
Yeah.
And so we explained the process, and so I'll just kind of start out with what we went through.
Okay.
Well, you have to, where you're going to put the library, you need to call Julie and have the various entities that provide services like cable and sewer and all those to mark your yard so you know where not to dig. And so that's the first thing you need to get out of the way. And then, of course, you need some strong guys or gals that will... are willing to participate and volunteer and help dig the hole and pour the concrete and put the 4x4s in and let it set. And then we had our, we painted our little free library when it came. And so then it was time, once that it was concrete had set with the 4x4s, we put the library on top of it. And then the books came. At our grand opening, everybody came with books, and we have over 200 books now, and a great selection. And so you organize the neighborhood, and you get them involved, and everybody just thought it was wonderful. And so that's basically it in a nutshell.
That's incredible. Now, where did you, where do you get the books to put in the little free library?
Okay, well, there's many ways, and well, as I had mentioned before, we have neighbors that come and donate all the time. I always go out and find new books in there, and then of course I've gone out and searched for bargains and gotten some books and had some books of my own that I donated. But one really, really very cool story that I'd like to share.
Sure.
The Little Free Library likes to encourage you to connect with authors and publishers. So I believe you did a story a couple weeks ago on an author by the name of Randy McWilson.
I did, yeah.
And he has written a series which is comprised of four books that centers around the town of Normal. It's a sci-fi series. It's really awesome. And it's one of those kind of edge-of-your-seat books series that you just can't put down. And so Randy McWilson, we contacted him, donated copies of all four of his books in the Back to Normal series. And so we're starting a book club.
There you go.
Our inaugural book club that's correlated with the Little Free Library that we have is going to do a book club on his Back to Normal series. So, and he autographed every book too, and that's really awesome. We are so excited and grateful for that.
That was Joanne Martin of the Little Free Library in Normal with Dan Swaney. And Jessica Kaida Bloomington lived about 30 times her weight. She recently ranked as the second strongest woman in the world in the lightweight division. Kite was joined by her coach, Drew Whitted of Be Strong, and she talked with WJBC's Susan Saunders this week.
Was this a surprise to place in this competition, or did you think you had a shot at it when you went to Florida to compete?
Thank you very much. I did think that I had a shot. Not all contestants made it to day two. It was a two-day competition. So I didn't know how many females were going to make it to day two. So, I mean, my goal was to obviously win.
Mm-hmm.
And... I had a really big support system that everyone behind me telling me that I was going to win. I did believe it in my heart. So, yeah, it was, I did plan to place, yes.
So it's a competition that I know absolutely nothing about. So pardon me while I talk to your coach, a man who has also competed in these competitions here. Drew, please explain to me a strong man, strong woman competition, because you've also been a very successful competitor in that realm.
That's correct. So strong man, strong woman, what you're looking at is max weight or max reps in 60 seconds most of the time. We use large objects, odd implements, such as a log, which is compared to a barbell. A barbell is 28 millimeters. The log, it's going to be 12 inches around. So you have to produce a high level of functional strength and balance, coordination, agility to be able to press and move these type of objects. You're primarily looking at pressing, pulling, pushing, and loading anything.
This is a title you have won for your category previously, yes?
As far as what?
Strongman.
Strongman? Yeah, I've taken home some big titles, but nothing like Jessica Kite. She's on the pro level.
Really?
The local circuit, the amateur circuit, I've done well.
Okay. Jessica, was this your first competition? Because I understand you've only been training for 4 years.
Oh, no. I've done a lot of competitions. Some from just your local, like, backyard show. And then, so the last biggest show that I did was at the Arnold in 2016, which was the top level that for women. That was the top level at that time at the Arnold, and it was an amateur show, but it was the highest that women could really go.
When you say the Arnold, is that short for Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes.
Okay.
He has, yeah, there's the Arnold Classic that's held in Ohio, usually the first weekend in March every year.
There is a difference, though, between weightlifting competitions and bodybuilding competitions. For those who don't understand the difference, can you explain that?
Yes. There's lots of difference. But, I mean, the way we train is completely different. The way we eat is also completely different. Bodybuilding typically will go up on stage in a bikini and flex. For people, you'll spray tan and get fake eyelashes and nails and all, you know, all the whole nine yards. And you'll go up on stage and you'll just pose, flex your muscles. I actually go up in front of people and I lift weights or I move weights, actually do the lifting. That is what I'm judged upon. If I flex, it's only for fun.
Now, I'm looking at your friend and coach here, Drew, and I don't think I'm seeing any fat on you, sir. I mean, you look like you could also be developed as a bodybuilder. Jessica, I can't see you, nor can the radio audience. Do you look like some of those bodybuilders, or does strength shape your body differently as a woman?
I mean, I definitely look muscular. I would say that I'm not as cut as a bodybuilder or as lean, but you can see my muscle definition.
You were in the lightweight category. So what range is that for a person's size? So you're in a fair competitive spirit.
We have to weigh under 140.4 pounds to be considered a lightweight.
Okay. How tall are you?
I am 5'4" and a half, almost 5'5".
Okay. And when I was talking to Drew off the air, he said, you are an incredible inspiration to a lot of people because 4 years ago you walked into his gym, the Be Strong gym, just looking to lose weight and get into physical shape. And to go from that to all of a sudden being such a high-level competitor is a pretty big journey. What flipped the switch for you that suddenly you wanted to be a competitor?
Well, I mean, there was a lot that went into it, but, you know, initially when I started, I was over 200 pounds, and then I just wanted to lose weight, and then once I started losing weight and, you know, start to develop and see muscles, and I wanted to be strong, and then I just wanted to be very strong, so and I just,
well, here
kind of happened, I guess.
Here will be the good answer that will help the rest of us understand how successful you are. How strong are you? What kind of weights are we talking about that you were lifting, pushing, and pulling in Florida?
Our deadlift medley, most people are familiar with the deadlift, so I'll go with that. It was a 300-pound axle, which is fatter than a bar. Then we had to deadlift a 350-pound barbell, and then we ended deadlifting a 400-pound frame for reps. We had 60 seconds to do all three implements, and I was able to finish with 21 reps on the 400-pound frame. Deadlifting that in 60 seconds. So.
Deadlifting that. And so that means you're putting it over your head? No.
Deadlifting, you just kind of stand up with it to lock out. Hips will be through. Okay. Shoulders will be locked out. Arms straight.
Sorry, my only weightlifting knowledge comes from limited watching of the Olympics, and they were always throwing everything over their head. But
yes, we did have an overhead press. One was a log press. It was 155 pounds, and we had to press it over our head as many times as we could in 60 seconds.
And you went how many times?
From the ground. I took it 5 times in the minute from ground to overhead.
Okay, just out of curiosity, Jessica, what do you do for a living? Is there anything in your job life that helps keep you in this shape on top of the training that you do?
Well, I work at Monaco's Pizza. I am a shift supervisor there, and then I also serve. So not really intensive hard labor.
No, not at all. Unless you're picking up employees every once in a while and setting them where they're supposed to be. Pizzas don't weigh that much.
Yeah, they don't like me to do that.
Drew, this is a unique sport, which is why I want to understand more. Do some people just have a natural talent for weightlifting, or can anyone be developed into being a successful, strong person, like super strong?
I believe all talents and abilities are acquired. Now, some people may be able to get there a little bit faster than others, but anybody willing to work for it can achieve a high level of success in any sport they wish.
That was powerlifting champion Jessica Kaida Bloomington and her coach Drew Whitted with Susan Saunders. The weekend news is next. This WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the weekend news. Changes have been made at First Student, the company responsible for busing students in Unit 5, after a series of problems with late and overcrowded buses in the first few weeks. First Student spokesman Chris Kemper said a new system for busing was supposed to have taken effect a week ago, but was delayed.
We initiated our new routing system. We believe it's made a positive impact. We are not ready to wave a victory flag yet by any stretch of the imagination.
Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel was asking for more patience from parents and students as they work to alleviate the issues. He says it should be another week before more changes can be implemented. Bloomington City officials are looking into claims that U.S. Cellular Coliseum's concession sales under the old management team there were never audited, and that, they say, has raised red flags. Coliseum's management was turned over in April to VenueWorks after it was run by Central Illinois Arena Management for the first 10 years. Blogger Diane Benjamin has sued to gain access to Siam's concessions sales records. She contends the management firm owes the city about $440,000 in concessions money over the 3 years the city has agreed to release.
I used the best knowledge I had based on those documents and the Siam management contract to see if the city got paid what they were owed. My calculations show they didn't.
Benjamin says she would like to see state police launch an investigation. It's been more than a year since Jason Hopkins was arrested for allegedly stabbing two people and knocking down a third person in downtown Bloomington. During a hearing in court this week, the judge found that the 36-year-old Hopkins is still unfit to stand trial. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers says several things would need to be determined by a psychiatrist before a trial could proceed.
That he understands the nature of the proceedings against him, that he is able to have effective communications with his client. Those are two of the big things.
Chambers says several options are being considered, including a commitment to a mental health facility or a finding of not guilty by reason of insanity. Illinois Wesleyan has found itself ranked among the 10 best colleges in the Midwest, according to Business Insider. The news didn't come as a surprise to Wesleyan Provost Jonathan Green. He says anyone who knows about the school knows how students are transformed by their experience.
They've got lots of small group and one-on-one attention from faculty. All of our classes are taught by faculty who have joined the institution because they want to be at a teaching university.
Green adds the average salary of Illinois Wesleyan students 10 years after enrollment is close to $55,000. It's among the highest for liberal arts schools. The University of Michigan topped the Business Insider's list. Democratic candidate for Congress, Junius Rodriguez, spoke about the power of incumbency during a stop in Bloomington this week. Rodriguez is challenging incumbent Republican Darren LaHood in November. Rodriguez questions the timing of LaHood opening a new district office in Bloomington 10 weeks before the election.
In our political system, the vested power of incumbency is always substantially greater than what any challenger might present. But the blatant use of tax dollars to advance a political purpose is especially disturbing.
Rodriguez says he would push legislation to reduce the perks that congressional incumbents can use in re-election campaigns. And for the first time in its 68-year history, the Threshermen's reunion in Pontiac had to be canceled.
There's just too much water and too much mud, and if we were to do anything at all, it would just leave big ruts in the grounds. And because of that, and because of the amount of water we've had, we've made the sad decision to cancel the show for this weekend.
Vice President Dave Herr says there's no way to reschedule it, but the Sunday parade was not canceled. That's the weekend news. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. It's time to take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, the Bloomington Normal Trades and Labor Assembly puts on its annual Labor Day parade from downtown Bloomington to Miller Park. On Tuesday, the Normal Town Council will consider a moratorium on video gaming machine licenses and approving a bike sharing program. Also Tuesday, Illinois State University will announce its fall enrollment, expected to be a record. On Saturday, the Illinois State football team will visit Northwestern, what's expected to be the Redbirds' final game against a Big Ten school for the foreseeable future. Saturday also marks the annual Bloomington Normal Race for the Cure at State Farm Corporate South. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Starr.